And we used to have some teachers that their pass, the intent was to embarrass students for having to go to the bathroom in the middle of class anyway. Their pass was a toilet seat, and the student had to wear it around their head with the lid flapped down. And I guess that's, now that's considered, yeah, we can't do that anymore. But
this isn't school.
It was kind of fun. Yeah, ruin their self-esteem. Anyway, okay. Yesterday's trivia question. Yesterday's trivia question was, mathematically, how is it that we can take 3/3, and these are three groups of three, and end up with an interval of a seventh, because 3 times 3 is 9, not 7. And one young man came to me with a very good solution that I have prepared to share with you, which is not the solution that I mean, it's the final same answer, but it's not the solution, that not the method that I would have chosen, so it's good to hear other methods. Who would like to venture an answer to this? Okay? My favorite sister.
It's because you're counting two notes twice.
Okay.
A, B, C, then C, D, E, and E, F, G.
Okay. All right. That's similar to the method that John Shelton shared with me. And I have here... So if we look at this here, the question again then is, mathematically, how can 3/3, three groups of three, make a seventh? I started at G. We have G, A, B, that's a third, 1, 2, 3. Then B, C, D, that's a third, 1, 2, 3. Then D, E, F, that's a third, 1, 2, 3. But when you count from the beginning, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, it's a seventh. The total interval is a seventh. And both Christy and John shared this answer. It's because we are counting, in this case starting at G, we're counting the B twice as the 3 from the first third and the 1 from the second third. And then also the D gets counted twice. And so 3 times 3 is 9, but then we have to subtract out. We can't count it twice. We can only count it once. So we subtract out 1 here and subtract out 1 here so that we don't count those two letters twice. And then so 9 minus 2 is 7. So that's a mathematical way to get 7, and that's a very appropriate way to do that. So thank you, Christy. Thank you, John. Thank you, others who may have had a similar answer. Anyone have a different answer? Oh, you saw mine. Anyone have a different answer or a different way to get the same answer? I approach this from the notion that since we are measuring a distance, that we really shouldn't start at 1. When we measure things, we don't start at 1, and we're measuring a pitch distance. You know, when you go to the gas station and you put gasoline into your car, the pump doesn't reset to 1. It resets to 0, and you start at 0, and you don't get to 1 until 1 gallon has been dispensed into. At first, 0 has been dispensed. So I approach this by reconsidering, looking here. Let's think of this. If we start at G, going to B is just 2 notes higher. So I think of this as 0. It's 2 notes higher. And then from B to C is 2 notes more. And from D to F is 2 notes more. And there are 3 of those that are 2 notes more, and 3 times 2 is 6. So it's 6 notes more. And sure enough, if you make the G 0, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 notes more. However, in our system, so 3 times 2 is 6, but in our system, we start counting at 1 and not 0 in the system of music intervals that we use. So we just add 1 to that since we start counting at 1, making 7. So there's another way to get 7. 3 groups of 2 notes more, 3 times 2 is 6, but since we start counting at 1, we add 1 at the end to the final answer, giving us 7. Probably a harder way to think of it, but also another way to get to 7. Okay? Any questions about that? But hopefully it's not fuzzy math. We want to make it clear. Okay. And really, either way, it results around this issue of starting at 1. The interval of a 1, and we call it a unison, the first interval, is not an interval at all. You don't move at all. It's two notes sounded simultaneously, the same pitch. And when we start measuring things and start counting at 1, then it gives us a different way than we're usually used to thinking of measuring things. But it is the system that's used, so that's what we deal with. Okay, today's trivia question, I'm going to wait because, in fact, I'm not going to do a question this time. I'm going to ask for your responses to a question, your input, but I want you to think about your input so you can keep it short and concise, and give me your input tomorrow. And you don't even know what the question is yet, but that's what's coming up. So in lieu of a trivia question, you'll have time to do a little bit of input to a question that was posed to me, because I'm sure you guys have good things to say about it too. And close all these things and get to today's question. This was a question that was posed from yesterday. Oh, you read it already. Okay. And this is an issue I would not have touched on, so I'm glad that it was asked, because this is really important. How do you lead songs without getting sick to your stomach and not getting nervous? Okay? And this is the question that I want you to have some input on tomorrow. So you can be thinking about, I have some things that I want to say about this. And quite frankly, this issue is not limited to song leading. Doing anything in the public service can make you nervous. And I know the other gentlemen that are participating here may want to say something about this too, from their personal perspective, what has helped them, or what will help in general. Okay, so I am going to say a few comments about this, and hopefully that this will be useful both to the individual who asked the question and for really everybody. Nervousness when participating in a public way will never completely go away. It is natural. And if you are not at least a little bit nervous, there may be something wrong. Like, maybe you don't really care. So be very careful. If you're feeling completely calm and you're on to do something, that might be a clue that you're not where you need to be as far as your seriousness about what you're about to do. The goal here is to focus your nervousness toward the task at hand. In music, what has helped me is the proper breathing and singing technique. I can control this muscle. Yes, it's one of those that's involuntary. Like when you're sleeping, it's doing its thing and you're not even thinking about it. But it's also voluntary. I can control this muscle. And if I'm working on this and my energy is focused here, it doesn't matter that my legs are shaking. The rest of it will work out fine. Focus that energy. And if you're a little bit nervous, it might even help you to be a little bit better. You've got a little bit more energy to put into the task at hand. Don't let the energy destroy you. Let it be your ally. Be prepared. There is no substitute for good preparation. And if you weren't nervous before, when you get up there and you're fumbling with, oh man, I can't even figure out what key this song is in, and what note on the pitch pipe to blow, and what hand conducting frame I'm going to use, and where my hand's going to start, and how I'm going to get this song started, and hear all these people ready to go, and I have no idea what I'm doing. then that'll just make you extra nervous. It is typical for, in song leading specifically, it is typical for people to write down maybe the song number and maybe the name of the song that they're going to lead. For beginning song leaders, I recommend that you write down a whole lot more stuff than that. Write down the key that the song is in. Write down whether the song starts on do, mi, or sol. And do I go up? I have my students draw a little arrow. Do I go up to, let's say it starts on sol. Do I go up to sol or do I go down to sol? Sometimes from the note that's blown, let's say maybe, is the note that's blown, does this song start on do, sol, or is it do, mi, sol? Those are very different. They're both sols. And if I just wrote down sol, I might go the wrong way and do the wrong one. So I have my students write a little arrow. This one's up to sol. This one's down to sol. What conducting frame am I going to use? Do I use a 3 pattern for this song? Do I use a 4 pattern for this song? Write that down. What conducting frame am I going to use? Where will my hand start? Starting is the hardest part. And personally, I like everybody to start with me. I don't want to be 2 or 3 measures into it before everybody's going. And if my hand is at the right place, let's say the song starts on beat 4 of a 4 song in 4, then my hand will start at 2, 3 will be a preparatory beat, and we can start on beat 4. Okay? Breath, sing, blah, blah, yeah, whatever the song is. Let me think of one in 4 that starts on beat 4. All the ones that I'm thinking of that start on the last beat are beat 3. He leadeth me, okay? He leadeth me. You can look if you want. It's 50 in the Red Songbook. Now, here, let me go through the things that I would write down for this song. Okay? All right. I'm looking at the song, He Leadeth Me, so I probably have 50 written down and maybe the title, He Leadeth Me. I would write this down. Okay. I look and I see there are 2 sharps at the beginning. 2 sharps tell me if it's in the key, if it's in a major key, it's the key of D. And I just so happen to know that I think all of the songs in the Red Songbook are in major keys. And only about 4 of the songs in the Blue Songbook are in minor keys. So is it major or minor? Chances are it's major. Okay, particularly if it's this book. So I don't have to worry about the minors. So 2 sharps tell me D, key of D. So D is the note I'm going to blow on the pitch pipe. So I might write that down, key of D, or blow D on the pitch pipe. Okay? Then I look further, and I see the starting pitch is A. And I know in the key of D, A is the 5th. D, E, F, G, A. It's the 5th. That's sol. Do, re, mi, fa, sol. It starts on sol. And the D that I blow on my pitch pipe is below this one, so it's going to go up to sol. So I'm going to blow D on the pitch pipe. I'm going to go up from that D to sol. Those are all things that I write down. And you can have little shortcuts to make it clear for you what you're doing. The song number, D, up, sol. Okay? Then, song starts on beat 4. It has a pickup or an anacrusis. The musical term for that is an anacrusis. There's an incomplete measure there. Typically, a measure will have 4 beats to it if it's in 4-4, which this song is in. Okay, but this song has just 1 beat there right at the beginning. That's a pickup. And so the song will start on beat 4. If I know what beat on which the song starts, I back up 2. 4 minus 2 is 2. That's where my hand starts. Time signature, 4-4, that top number tells me I conduct this in a 4 pattern. That top 4 tells me I use the 4 pattern, which is down, in, out, up. Down, in, out, up. 1, 2, 3, 4. So the hand will start at beat 2. The preparatory beat will be beat 3. Don't beat beat 2. That's where the hand starts. This is the 0. Okay? Beat three is the preparatory beat. That's when everybody should be breathing. He leadeth me. That's the way it should be. Breath, he leadeth me. One more time, hand at two. Breath, he leadeth me. You want to do that? Okay. Just rhythmically say it with me. This is hard for beginning song leaders. Okay? First of all, let's all do the four pattern together. You can use your right hand, I'll use my left hand so we can mirror each other. All right? We'll go slowly. Down, in, out, up. Down, in, out, up. Down, in, out, up. Okay? Now, the hard part. Where do we start? Hand at two, one, two. Ready, breath, he leadeth me, okay? And that preparatory beat should be really in tempo. So let me think, what tempo do I want? About like that, okay? Okay, so ready, breathe, he leadeth me, like that. Now, let me do the pitching part of all of that, because I didn't really pitch it, I just picked a pitch. Here's a D. Do, and which way I go up? Do I go do, sol? No, do, mi, sol. Hand it to. Breath, he leadeth me. Oh, blessed thought. Again, hand it to. Ready? Breathe, he leadeth me. Oh, blessed thought. Okay, good. All right. All of that for the beginning song leader. I would have all of that stuff written down. So there is no... See, I can look at this stuff, and I've done music enough, that I can get this all pretty quickly. And I don't have to think much about this. But there is nothing about what I just went through that is intuitive for most people. And unless you've studied it or done it a lot, you're going to have to think about it. So be prepared. Look over the song ahead of time. Are there places where there's a hold? Are there difficult words? We're going to do a song today that may be new to many of you. You know what I did for about an hour this morning? I looked at that song. And I sort of know what I'm doing here. Because I want to be prepared. An hour just on one song. And hopefully it'll go well. But work on it. Look at it. Be prepared. Song leading, you know, sometimes we think, you know, giving the talk is so hard and you gotta get your scriptures up and do your outline and all of that, and that's good. But song leading is no easier. None of this stuff is easy. It requires preparation. Even when you know what you're doing. It requires preparation. Be prepared. Know yourself and work within your capabilities. And I may not be going exactly here where you think I'm going to go. You know what part of the public worship is hardest for me? Or maybe not even public worship might not be the right term here. The public service, things that we do standing up in front of a group of people. Reading of scripture can be challenging. The table can be challenging. Announcements are always challenging. The hardest thing for me is funerals. And there's a lot to do to prepare for a funeral. I have found that food and flowers should probably be left to somebody else if you want them done well. I can do food, I can do flowers, but if you want it done well, somebody else should be doing that. And it's okay to let somebody else do that. But often there are a lot of other things that I am involved with. I've tried to get out of this. I have. Let me be honest. Because it's not a fun thing to do. Typically, you know the deceased, maybe very well. And I'm not hesitant to be pretty blunt sometimes. At a funeral where alcohol was involved in the accident, I talked about alcohol. And the difficulties, the challenges of that. And at a funeral where the deceased was not a member of the church, all the family members were, the deceased was not, they actually asked me to say, to talk about that he wasn't a member. Okay, you asked for it. And they still keep on asking me to do these, so I don't know. Anyway, there's a lot to do at a funeral in preparation for it. Often one of the things that we do is a summary of the person's life. And that ends up being like a 4 to 6 page document talking about a lot of the things that that person has done. That takes time to prepare those things. And lots of times they want a little slideshow, you know, and they give you 300 pictures and say, okay, here you go. And, you know, you're meeting with them Thursday night with the family and the funeral Saturday, and I don't like to take time off from work, so it's some long nights. I have found personally, I will not do an all-nighter. I cannot do that and be emotionally functional the next day. Funerals are hard enough. I don't need the extra stress of just not having enough sleep. I do have some sleep issues, and I'm not going to pull an all-nighter. I just won't do that. My wife, on the other hand, would do that, and then she'll sleep after the funeral. So sometimes, you know, we're not sleeping in the same bed the night before a funeral. She may be up all night typing in the finishing touches on the story of that person's life, after I had spent the whole evening making the slideshow or something like that. There's a lot of preparation to that, but know your capabilities and work within them. Also, I sort of have to have a regular meal. If it's like a noontime funeral, I need to be sure I've got a little snack in there, just, again, for the same reasons. Otherwise, I'm not worth very much. Know your personal limitations and work within those. Back to the issue of being prepared, it's okay to have a handkerchief handy, or even to blow your nose in front of the group. Got a little cough going on? If you keep these in a baggie, I kind of sweat a little bit in my pocket, and these get really gross because they're wrapped in paper. But keep them in a little baggie, and it works just fine. You can take it out, put one in your mouth, and keep going. Song leaders don't do this. You know, you take a quick catch breath and that thing comes back and gets lodged in your throat. Pretty soon somebody's going to be having to do the Heimlich maneuver on you. So song leader, no, not while leading songs. But at other times, these can come in real handy. Have all your stuff with you. Your glasses, your pitch pipe, your songbook, your list of things to do, your notes. Whatever it is that you're doing, have your stuff with you. If it's a special occasion, a special circumstance, be prepared for that. If it's going to be outdoors, sunglasses, a hat. If it's cold, a jacket. It's not cold, real cold in California often, but for some reason, the day we buried my dad outdoors, buried him in the graveyard, we had unusually cold weather. We had as pets some guinea pigs, and one was pregnant, and she gave birth that morning, and none of them survived just because of the cold. And I was wearing long underwear under my suit pants and a regular shirt and a sweater vest and a suit jacket on top of all of that, and was much more comfortable. And you shake enough as it is, but dressing appropriately made that a lot easier. Remember, the people in the audience love you and want you to do well. this is not one of those contest shows where after you perform, some guy with a British accent sarcastically says to you, you know, that he's heard worse. I've had worse, but I can't remember when. You know, something like that. It's not one of those. These people love you and want you to do well. They understand that you are nervous, and they will act appropriately toward that. I really did on Monday want to say, for example, as you know, those of you who are here Monday, some things regarding Clint Sparks and how that related to some things that were, in my mind at least, related to some similar issues with my sister-in-law and brother-in-law, Connie and Peter Crown, and how that affected my mother-in-law, Mary. You remember those comments. Those are difficult for me to make. Did anybody notice I was shaking? Yeah? I was. Anybody think less of me because of it? No. Because you love me. And I said what I had to say, and we went on. And it was okay. It worked out. Yeah, there you go. It was prepared enough that irrespective of what I mumbled, you could still read what I meant up there. Is that what you meant by that?
I meant you didn't trust your memory and mind under the emotional circumstances that you wrote it out.
Right, which is important too. I have seen at funerals sometimes where people are allowed to, does anybody have anything they want to say? And somebody comes up to say something and then they can't remember anything they want to say, which is, if you're going to do that, it's a good idea to write it out, because under the emotion at the time, you may not remember anything that you want to say. And you may have some really nice things to say. Okay, I hope that that's all I have to say about this. I hope that that is helpful. I'm sure there are others of you who may be able to add something. And so tomorrow, in lieu of our answers to trivia questions, we'll ask for participation from the audience. Okay.
One thing Matt does is he has his own copy of the songbook, and he writes all that stuff as he leads the song. He writes all of those notes that you mentioned in the margin up there at the top. So as he's getting requests for songs, you know, over time, he has the notes already written in his book.
Good. Good comment. Did everybody hear that, or do I need to summarize that? Basically, if I can shorten a little bit, she said, particularly when you're asking for selections, then you can't really prepare because you don't know what numbers, you know, what song is going to be chosen. And so Mark has written, he has a personal copy of the book, and he's written a lot of that information. Matt, I'm sorry. Matt's yours. I know. I was there. You guys made me sing. Anyway. Matt has written in his personal songbook a lot of that information. So it's right there for all the songs? As many as he knows, okay? Another thing along those lines, it's okay to say, I don't know this one, and to bow out. It's okay to do that. Brother so-and-so, could you lead this one for us? Or none of us knows it. Well, maybe now might not be the appropriate time to sing it then. Let's wait until somebody knows it, kind of thing. I don't usually welcome requests, just to let you know how I feel about that. Okay, well, I don't want other comments. Tomorrow, give me other comments along those lines. Okay. Let's see. What are we going to do next? Let's do Peace, Perfect Peace. 239. We'll just do it straight through. do mi sol. Appreciation of this song, and I hope we have met that. I really, really like this song. I hope you really like this song now too. For basses, that interval, we're still struggling with that a little bit from the last note on the first line to the first note on the second line. There are little tricks that may or may not help you, of things to remember when you're trying to do intervals. That interval is a minor seventh. Bum, bum. If you know the musical West Side Story, it's the opening interval of There's a Place for Us. There's a place for us. That may or may not help you. If you don't know the song, it doesn't help you at all. Okay? But a lot of people know that song. There's a place for us. That's one way to get the minor seventh. Okay, that's all I'm going to say on that. Let's move on to the Psalm 1. We have that on a handwritten copy. Psalm 1. Verses 1 and 2. I am going to pitch this higher than is written here. Oh, blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly. I'm going to stop you because I knew what you're starting with me. Okay? And I thought I gave all the right clues. Okay? I didn't tell you when to breathe, but I did do the preparatory beat and all that business. Okay, 1, 2, 3. Here we go.
Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night.
Let's repeat it. Here we go.
Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night.
Okay, Psalm 23, which was in the 70s in the Red Song Book, 73 was the one we did. 73. Yesterday we talked a little bit about cadences, and I didn't fully explain it. That was on purpose. I would like us to stop on the second line in the third measure at the end of the word lie. Makes me down to lie. We'll just stop there. Stop and let me know how finished you think the song feels at that point. Does it feel like we've come to a ending, or does it feel like we have to have more? Okay? No soul, the Lord my shepherd, I'll not want. Could that be the end of the song? No. If the song just ended there, we would think, come on, what's the rest, okay? Is that the end of a phrase? Sure. Does it feel like the end of a phrase? Yes. But does it feel like the end of the song? No. This is what we call a half cadence. A half cadence ends on five. A chord built on the fifth scale degree. Okay? When you finish on five, you have a half cadence, and it gives a feeling of, yes, it finishes a phrase for us, but no, it does not finish a song for us. Thus the term half cadence. It is a cadence. It does have a bit of finality to it, but not a bit of completing the song to it. Okay? So there's a half cadence. Let's stop again. On the second page, he leadeth me at the end of me. Okay? Let's go right on these altos and sopranos, alto, soprano. Here we go. Faster, please. End of song? No. What do you think we have here? Half cadence again. A chord built on the fifth scale degree. Okay? Now, let's go on from the rest. Feed at me the quiet waters find. Here we go. The quiet waters find. End of phrase? Yes. End of song? Yes. What type of cadence, probably? At least an authentic. Perfect authentic? Yeah, it is. So, authentic is 5-1, either perfect or imperfect. Just authentic, and it has the word authentic in it, it's 5-1. So the second, the ters chord is a 5 chord, a chord built on the fifth scale degree. By is a 1, the chord built on the first scale degree. Okay? And so we have 5-1. So we have perfect authentic. We have authentic. Then, to be perfect, it has to not only be 5-1, it has to be two more things. Both chords, the 5 chord and the 1 chord, need to be in root position, which means the fifth scale degree needs to be in the bass line on the 5, and the first scale degree needs to be in the bass line on the 1 chord. Okay? And they are. The fifth scale degree in B-flat is F. B, C, D, E, F. And we've got an F there in the bottom on the bass. And then you look at the bass line to determine whether it's root position or some inversion. Okay? Bass line, we've got an F. There's the 5 of the 5 chord. There's the root of the 5 chord. Then the next one, the by, Waters by, is a B-flat,
in B flat. B flat's the first note, first scale degree. And I got a B flat right there in the bass line. So we've got it in root position. So both chords are in root position. The second item that makes it perfect is, does the soprano, the top voice, finish on the tonic, on the do, on the first scale degree, which is B flat, and sure enough, soprano also finishes on B flat. So yes, this is perfect authentic. Then, one other thing that even nails it more solidly, as far as giving us a real strong finish, is look at the previous chord. What's the composer doing at the previous chord? The previous chord is a one chord, B flat, D, F. The B flat chord, it's a one chord in second inversion. Second inversion means the fifth of that chord is on the bottom. It's not in root position. The fifth of the chord is on the bottom, and sure enough, it is. If you have a triad in second inversion, I'll cover these things in more detail later, but if you have a triad in second inversion as a composer, you need to justify, why did I put this triad in second inversion? You can't just namby-pamby do it anytime. There has to be a good reason. Common reason to do it is what's called a cadential 6-4. Because this note is the same note as the next F, only they're an octave apart, but that doesn't matter, F to F, the cadential 6-4 is a good way to, the cadential 1-6-4, the cadential one chord in second inversion is a good way to prepare to the five chord that's going to take you home to the one chord that's going to provide the perfect authentic cadence for you. So it's just another drive it on home. We're ready to finish this song up. Cadential 6-4 going to five, going to one, perfect authentic cadence. Okay. Now that may be more than you wanted to know, but fun. When I explain this, you'll say, oh, that's what he meant. It's not that hard. And it's not that hard. It's just, I don't want to yap too much. I'm all right. Well, let's just sing it now. Let's do verse 2 if I can remember to sing verse 2. Question? Oh, no. The five chord moving to the one chord. Yeah, no, it's not a ratio. The five chord is moving to the one chord. And we just say that we're going 5-1. Okay, but yeah, it's not odds at the racetrack. The five chord is built on the fifth scale degree. A triad built on the fifth scale degree in B of B flat, that would be F. So there's a triad built on F. It's an F chord, F-A-C. If you look, those notes are F-A-C. Yes. Yes, you do have to be able to read the notes. Notice what I taught first was reading the notes on the. I know. We'll come back to this. If all of that, if you don't get all of that, that's okay. Are there other questions? Other than what's all of that really mean? Okay. Let's press on. Let's do starting second verse. Do so mi, and it's trying to go just a tad bit fast. Do so mi, do mi so. My soul
God restore again, and me to heart of men. Within the path of righteousness, within the
Yeah. I'm going to skip. How did that get on here? Oh, no, okay. Blues songbooks, 2-4-3. Blues songbooks, 2-4-3. Raise your hand if you know this song. Okay. Doug accused me, but rightly so, yesterday of liking, I can't remember the name of the song, Wonderful Jesus, yesterday. This is one of the songs that Mike liked. So let's see if we can learn this, and you can see how new the song is too. Now this one's some a little tricky. It has kind of barbershop quartet type harmonies in some places. Okay, so we'll have to work at it a little bit, but once you get it, you have to be completely insensitive to not get it, I hope. This is a neat song. The first of this year wasn't the first time I heard it, but I don't know. For some reason, I was just letting it pass by, and it grabbed my attention. We had a little meeting on New Year's Eve, and when they sang it there, I went, whoa, I need to look at this more closely. And I have, and it's very neat. Let's do the chorus. Everybody do, let's do the soprano part.
No.
Chorus, soprano part. Down there on some low notes that are hard to sing loudly. If there were not a flat on that A, on ter, And by the way, because there's a flat shown there, it lasts the entire measure. So the E, ter, now Li, the ter and Li, both are A flat. It's not near him I want to be, near him eternally, would be A natural.
Him eternally
is the way it's written. Not
eternally
is wrong.
Eternally. Near him I want to be, near him eternally. Near him for prophecy.
Okay? Alright, baseline. Near him, Domi, near him I want to be, near him eternally. Let's just have basses sing alone. Let's see if we can do that. Here we go. Near him I want to be, near him who loves me and keeps me each day. He is my Lord and King, ever to him of me, and I shall be near him while he passed away. And if you can't get down that low,
near him,
instead of going from
ages,
you can just speak while ages pass away. That works fine too. Same note. Just keep the F there. Don't go down the octave. Okay? Let's add ladies as soprano to that. No alto yet. Soprano, bass. I'll just listen. Let me re-pitch to be sure we're close.
Do, do, so, mi, do.
And because of the measure line, the natural gets canceled. So on the word day, it becomes E flat. So we have E flat. Just down a step. And you don't really see that printed because you just got to know that the bar line cancels the natural and there is an E flat in the key signature. So there is a note change there, even though it doesn't look like there might be. All right. Here we go.
Do, si, do, sol is the alto part. Do, si, soprano, alto.
And sopranos, just kind of keep it a little quiet so we can hear the altos. Have the altos work on the part, but it's nice to have the soprano part there just so that we can, in fact, most of you sing alto, so we can hear what the melody is to it and harmonize to it.
Do, si, do,
let's just have the ladies do that. Having kind of got it a feel for what that's like. Let's have ladies only.
No feet or so when we go. No, so me, don't put the bases.
We'll do some music theory for the balance of the time here. This is close to where we finished yesterday, and the reason I put this up here is not that I am condoning by any means the use of the piano in the worship service. And I probably feel stronger about this than many people here. So if you want to talk to me about that, realize what you're getting into. Okay? But I think this is a good way to see the way our notes are arranged, is to see something physical, in this case, a drawing of the piano keyboard. The white keys we label with the plain letters, C, D, E, F, G, A, B, C, etc. And we talked about how a sharp raises a pitch one half step, a flat, little thing that looks like a B, lowers it, and that two pitches that are spelled differently but are really the same pitch, we call them enharmonic. For example, A sharp and B flat really are the same pitch. They are enharmonic pitches. I've written then all the black keys are enharmonic. They all have two names. And we can, for example, with C, go up a half step. A half step is always the one that's right next to. Go up a half step from C, and we get C sharp. Go down a half step from D, and we get D flat. So this black key can be named two different ways. It is enharmonic, C sharp, or D flat. Now, you'll notice that between E and F, there's no black key there. So if this much is a half step, how much is this much? A whole step. And here we don't have the issue of counting by starting at one. One half step means a half step up. So this is like the zero. One half step up.
one, two half steps make a whole. Two halves make a whole. The math even works at everything. Okay? So this is two half steps or a whole step. How much is this? A half step. When there's no black key in between, it's a half step. So there's a half step between E and F. There's also a half step between B and C. All the other white keys are a whole step apart. Okay? So, what would E sharp be? The same as F? Yes, they are enharmonic. If we take E and raise it a half step, we get the same pitch as F. Or F flat would be the same as E. C flat would be the same as B. B sharp would be the same as C. Okay? And now I've written in all of them up at the top. So B sharp and C are the same. C sharp and D flat are this black one. D, there is no other enharmonic unless we go to double sharps or double flat. So that's just D. D sharp or E flat. E or F flat. E sharp or F. F sharp or G. G. G sharp or A flat. A. A sharp or B flat. B or C flat. And then back to where we started, B sharp or C. Okay? Many of these can be written two different ways. There are a bunch of them are enharmonic. Now, this little chart accomplishes the same thing. I just took all of those and took the keyboard away. And we have the same stuff. The ones that are aligned vertically are enharmonic. So B sharp and C are the same thing. C sharp and D flat are the same. D, B sharp, E flat, B, F flat, B sharp and F, F sharp and G flat, G, G sharp, A flat, A, etc. Okay? Each of these being a half step apart. So from here to here is a half step. From here to here is a half step. From here to here is a half step. The half step is the smallest interval that we have in Western music. And when I say Western music, I don't mean country Western. I mean Western, like Western European and the United States and the Western world, as opposed to a music system they might have in ancient China or ancient India, which is a different musical system. But this system that we use in the Western world, the half step is the smallest interval. And each of these are half step apart. This can be equally useful. And it's the same thing. Okay, one more thing, and here I've written the G major scale, and here is the C major scale, and with each of them I've written in the solfège below it. The first scale degree is Do, the second one Re, third scale degree is Mi, etc. And here are the scale degrees for C. Notice the Do moves. Do is G in the key of G, or in the on the G scale. Do is C on the C scale. I use a system of movable Do. There is a system of fixed Do that I do not endorse. I'm using the movable Do system. It moves depending on what key we are in. Then, what I have placed here are intervals in between each of these. Between G and A is a whole step. Between A and B is a whole step. B and C is a half. C and D is a whole. B and E is a whole, E to F sharp is a whole, F sharp to G is a half. This pattern of whole step, half step, whole step, whole step, whole step, half step is true for every major key, every major scale, all 15 of them. So it's true for that one too. And that's all I have for today, because we're out of time.